Good afternoon. Something interesting happened that I want to share with you the day after we recorded the upcoming show. I saw an AARP bulletin with the faces of Alzheimer's, a whole front page with face after face, Ronald Reagan, William D. Koonin, Jimmy Stewart, Margaret Thatcher, Etta James, Peter Falk, Perry Como, Abigail Van Buren, and it goes on and on. Intelligent, high-functioning, high-achieving people, all with Alzheimer's. This cover emphasizes the importance of the upcoming show. The upcoming show is about Alzheimer's, non-toxic treatments for prevention and cure of Alzheimer's disease. So listen, enjoy, understand what you're hearing, and give me feedback. I would appreciate it. Enjoy. Welcome back. Welcome back. This is Take Charge of Your Health with Corinne Fornari, clinical nutritionist and physician assistant. Every week I present new and creative ways to help make sense of health information and bring it home to you and your family. With years of clinical experience and research into traditional and cutting-edge technologies, I give practical information to help you take charge of your health. Well, welcome back. I have my two favorite people and my favorite audience all here together. I have Dr. Jacob Teitelbaum. He is medical director of Chronicity Inc., national author. You know him, but I'm going to introduce him anyway. Cures A to Z, iPhone and Android app, but also the author of From Fatigue to Fantastic, Beat Sugar Addiction Now, Pain-Free 1-2-3, and Real Cause, Real Cure, the 9 root causes of the most common health problems and how to solve him. He's our go-to doctor when we want to know how to solve them. And my co-host, Carol Peterson. Welcome, welcome.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon, everybody.
Hello, everybody.
Dr. Teitelbaum is in the enviable position of being in Hawaii right now. In bright, sunny, warm weather. Are you barefoot? No, don't tell me. Just don't tell me.
I am wearing my T-shirt, which is my main article of my shorts and my T-shirt, and that's how I work.
Well, that's...
But even when I'm treating people by phone, I have my T-shirt on, and I say, life is good.
Well, we were ice skating last weekend, and we had a great time, a frozen pond right behind the house, and it was absolutely delicious, cold and icy, and our nose was bright red, and it's kind of fun. Not quite the same reason our nose is red as why your nose would be red where you are.
Oh, enough my ties and I glow in the dark.
So I wanted to bring up something that I found really interesting, and what it is that an article in the New York Times science section, and guess what they were talking about? They were talking about bone broths and how bone broths have been an integral part of cultures worldwide and a method and means to maintain healthy. It was really interesting to see. It takes them only about 8 to 10 years to catch up, but you know what? They did. And they're also what?
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
Or it's to go back to the past and go back to what people usually did for sustenance, or it was part of their culture to drink bone broth. I just want to interject. I have this wonderful card, since I'm a pharmacist, and somebody is going into their pharmacy, and the pharmacist is filling the prescription, and there's this tube running down from a big bottle that's on top of the card, and it says chicken soup.
Very similar.
Yeah.
But they're opening bone broth, like soup stalls in New York City, and people can go and purchase their bone broth. Bone broths have been known for centuries, but then they became kind of not in American method of cooking. They were lost for a while, but chefs have known them forever, and they use them. They use the bone broths in their gravies to enhance flavor and even to help digestion. As you might remember, we talk about bone broths when we discuss any type of GI diseases or inflammation in the intestines. We also talk about bone broth when we work with women, when I work with women with osteoporosis. What do you think, Dr. Teitelbaum?
Well, you know, there's so many different things in our diet and nutrition that can make such a big difference. But where the money is in the medications, such as Fosamax. So if you look at things, and my favorite nutrient is something called strontium for bone density. There are many double-blind placebo-controlled studies going out over 8 years now showing that the mineral strontium is almost twice as effective as a medication, Fosamax, and after 5 years where Fosamax causes more fractures than it prevents, the strontium keeps preventing fractures and preventing fractures. But there's a main problem, one major problem with the strontium, and that is where the Fosamax nets a couple bucks per pill in terms of profit. The strontium costs about a nickel. So there's really not much money in it, and therefore the doctors don't hear about it. So whether you're looking at chicken soup and the factors in it from the bones that will give the bones what they need to heal, whether you're adding magnesium, vitamin K, D, boron, silica, and especially strontium. I like a mix called OsteoStrong combined with strontium, those two for my women who have osteopenia. These things are so much more effective than the medications, so much cheaper, and instead of side effects, you get side benefits. So I am very pleasantly surprised that the New York Times has caught up with Jewish mothers of 500 years ago. My kudos.
Well, it's about time. But today we really wanted to talk about, but that was a side, we wanted to discuss Alzheimer's. Because as the population is aging, we're seeing more and more and more incidences of Alzheimer's. And many people, when you talk with them, they say, oh, well, my mother or my father or my aunt or uncle, you know, they're losing their memory. They just assume that it's a natural part of aging. Now, I just spent 2 weeks with my mother, 92 years old, sharp as a tack. Memories from the past, like you can't believe, but also in terms of cognitive skills for right now, in terms of studying and learning. And she's even begun teaching a class in Italian to people who come to her house. You know, that's starting at 91, and she's continuing at 92 years old. So, Dr. Teitelbaum, I wanted to ask you, is Alzheimer's just a natural progression into aging, or does it have to be?
No, it isn't. But first, what I'd like to give listeners is an important distinction. Alzheimer's is not when you forget where you left the keys. And in my 20s, I forgot where I left the keys. I didn't Alzheimer's is when you forget how to use the keys.
Okay.
The difference is when we were 20 years old, we forgot the keys. We weren't worried, oh, my God, am I losing my mind? That didn't happen later until people have children and stuff. There's certain normal things. And if you look at your computer, when you've got 30 gigs of stuff on your computer, it takes a while to hunt through and find the files sometimes, where when you have a fresh computer with nothing in its memory, the files pop up much quicker. And the same with our minds. When people hit their 50s, 60s, and 70s, they have a lot more in their brain than they did when they were 15 years old. And sometimes it takes a little while for the search to pull it up. That's not Alzheimer's. Now, I want to give people a couple quick stats. You have about 10 million people in the U.S. who have been diagnosed with dementia. About half of those, 5 million Americans, have been diagnosed with Alzheimer's. Now, if you have a loved one with Alzheimer's, you need to know this piece of data that most neurologists don't hear about, which is that 30 to 50% of people diagnosed with Alzheimer's disease at autopsy turn out not to have any Alzheimer's at all. They were misdiagnosed, which meant they had other things, often very, very treatable if we had bothered to look for them, that were causing their dementia. So even though the doctors are, what's the medical word I'm looking for, clueless about how to properly diagnose and treat dementia, it doesn't mean that the listeners, that the people you love, have to suffer with it. We're going to teach you today how, in many cases, to improve mental functioning, even if Alzheimer's is present, and in some cases, how to make it go away.
Well, wonderful. So how would you make a distinction? How would a doctor diagnose dementia or Alzheimer's if somebody came to them with memory problems?
Well, most people, sad to say, and the studies are clear, that the large majority of people diagnosed with Alzheimer's and dementia have not gone even through the bare-bones basic American Academy of Neurology evaluation. What happens to most doctors, especially if they're taking Medicare, they've got 5 minutes per visit. That's what Medicare, in essence, will end up paying them for. So what happens is you walk in and you say, you know, my loved one has trouble with her memory, and all of a sudden their brain, what have they been taught? Oh, give them two medications, Aricept and Namenda, two medications which do not improve cognitive function. They slightly decrease the worsening of cognitive function. They're worth using to a degree, but that's all that most doctors do. They say, oh, you're having problems with your memory. Oh, yeah, probably early dementia, Alzheimer's, blah, blah, blah. Here are two medications. Now, say you have enough sense to go to a neurologist, they will more often, hopefully, good ones, will send you to somebody who specializes in doing cognitive function, where they actually break down the different components of how the mind works, and they're testing for different, shall we say, executive functions, and they get a better sense that way of what's going on. They can start to get a better sense of whether you're dealing with a multi-infarct dementia from mini strokes, whether you're dealing with a toxic dementia, whether you're dealing with more of an Alzheimer's, and there's different subsets. And it's such a devastating illness that people really need to get properly evaluated. And for basic bare bones, go to a neurologist. But even most neurologists, and this is what the research shows, they're not doing even basic evaluation. They're just doing what the drug companies tell them to do, which is give the too expensive but near useless, well, not useless, two very profitable medications.
Now, I was at a conference once, first of all, that spoke about 1/4 of those people being diagnosed with Alzheimer's were B12 deficiency, which created a permanent neurologic deficit.
Well, not necessarily permanent. It's permanent because they don't treat it. And it may be in cases where it's gotten really, 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 really bad that there may be some non-reversible component. But the thing is that, first of all, most people with B12 deficiency have a normal B12 level.
Mm-hmm.
Blood test is technically normal. And doctors have no clue what normal means. Normal doesn't mean healthy. Normal just means you're not in the lowest 2.5% of the population. So if you had an income of $8,100 a year, the doctor would say that your income is totally normal. You're not in the lowest 2 standard deviations of 2.5% of the population. Now, poverty is under $16,000 a year. So 3/4 of people in poverty would be defined as normal. And for B12 levels, it's kind of like that. If your B12 level is over about 210, the doctor will say it's normal, even if you have dementia, where it needs to be over 540. So what I recommend as part of the assessment is a vitamin B12 level, And if it's under 540, I recommend either B12 shots or at least a good 5 milligram sublingual B12 to be taken daily to build the level up pretty high so it can get into the brain where it's needed.
Now, there is also some controversy on what type of B12. Do we all need methylated B12? Do we need hydroxy B12? Or is cyanocobalamin, which is the most common form of B12, is that adequate? And would an oral work? Because in older patients, we have reduced hydrochloric acid. So would an oral work? Or would we have to go to sublingual or shots?
Mm-hmm.
Do you think I asked you enough questions?
I can just picture. You have these 20 people dying of thirst, and you have the doctor sitting around. They're saying, well, we don't know if they're dying of thirst because the test is not conclusive. The other ones are saying, well, maybe they're dehydrated. Should we give them warm water or tap water or bottled water? And they're arguing until the people are all dying. And meanwhile, this holistic mother or 500 or a Jewish mother or holistic doctor walks in and says, my God, these people need water. Give them water. It doesn't matter what kind. Give them hot water, cold water, tap water. But just give them water. So they need B12.
Okay.
Is there a little bit of benefit of the methylated B12? Perhaps. I think in real life, it doesn't really matter for most people which form of B12 you're giving. If you give it by injection, it's all absorbed. If you give the tablets, you bypass a lot of the absorption problems, even with just B12 and tablets versus food. So the bottom line, I'm going to play Jewish mother. B12 deficient. Eat.
Yes, Mom.
Take the B12 however you're going to give it. I don't care what form you get it in. Once you've gotten at least, you know, the basic handle, then we can go over the nuances, in which case I think perhaps the methyl B12, especially if you're giving it IV or IM, then the hydroxy methyl B12 is preferred to the cyanocobalamin. But if you're giving it sublingual or by mouth, just give the 5 milligrams, 5,000 micrograms. I don't care which form you're giving.
Well, memory loss or quote-unquote Alzheimer's is supposedly preferential to females. You have a higher percentage being diagnosed with Alzheimer's in the female population. What do you think accounts for this, Doctor?
Well, you're going to see that women are more likely to go through menopause than men are to go through menopause, although it does happen in both. You're also going to see that a woman's immune system is different than a man's. A woman needs to be able to carry a baby for 9 months without rejecting the little bugger or right out. You'll see that diseases that affect immunity. Alzheimer's is a disease at the end of the day that reflects a type of inflammation and immune dysfunction. Affect women about threefold as often as they do men. We see the same with fibromyalgia, rheumatoid arthritis, lupus, where other illnesses will affect men more. I don't think it's that big of a difference men and women in this disease, but you'll see a number of factors where we each have the things that are, you know, pros and cons, strengths and weaknesses.
Mm-hmm.
Or to give the prevalent reason why women lose their minds more than men, it was because they happen to be married to men and they drive them crazy. So that would be
I just had that thought come up in my mind as you said it. I wasn't going to say it.
I was thinking that also, and I said, well, I don't think I want to play that card, not at the beginning of the show.
So one of the things I know can have a great deal of impact is a lot of people take various prescription drugs that can cause a memory problem as a side effect.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, girl. I mean, it's just, there's so many, and an important one would be the incontinence medications because they block acetylcholine, and low acetylcholine blocks memory. So it's a really nasty thing. And there are studies that look at it, and they show that especially if you're taking two or three different medications that affect acetylcholine, the odds of getting dementia go up dramatically. On the other hand, you don't want to spend every day laughing so hard that tears run down your leg either. So there's a nice, simple herbal thing. And here's an example, once again, of when you compare standard medicine, which has its real strengths, to comprehensive medicine, which includes also the natural remedies. So you'll see for incontinence, using the herb Angelica, the product I use is called Saga Pro, S-H-E-A-P-R-O. Mm-hmm. It can be taken with the medication, but most people find it dramatically helps their incontinence, men or women. There's so many different ways, you know, to handle it. So for incontinence in general, before you have to go to the medications that will block memory as well as blocking the urine from leaking. And that's just the tip of the iceberg. We have a study protocol called the MIND protocol, and we're actually doing a study now. For those listening, if you have a family member with dementia, as long as they've been diagnosed by a neurologist with dementia or Alzheimer's, and as long as they're not bedridden, I mean, if they're basically able to be out of the house with help, of course, guidance, they can participate in the study where we apply the MIND protocol, which is metabolism, optimizing hormones, I is infections, N is nutritional support, and D is drugs. And the D in drugs does not mean putting them on more drugs. It means getting people off of medications they don't need. Many of the elderly are on 10, 15, 20 medications.
And I see that.
Mind is that it's really easy to add a medicine, but it takes time to get people off the medication. So for many of the medications, often most of the medications people are taking, when you evaluate them, they don't need them anymore. You see over and over, when you get people off the medications they don't need, a lot of times their so-called Alzheimer's magically disappears.
Now, you mentioned hormones, and along with incontinence, testosterone is really an important hormone. Would you say that's got a major role, or are some hormones a bigger part of this problem over others?
Well, the two big ones would be the thyroid and the testosterone. And I think, you know, well, there's argument with it, but I think the estrogen does play a role, even though that's fallen out of favor. But the studies show that those with the lowest levels of testosterone are much more likely to develop Alzheimer's. So men who went on to develop Alzheimer's, for example, had about half the level of active testosterone in the bloodstream as those that don't. And every 50% drop, or every 50% increase in testosterone is associated with a 26% lower risk of developing Alzheimer's. When you look at thyroid tests that are in the low normal range, totally normal, but in the low end of the normal range, 240% higher risk in women of developing Alzheimer's. And that's another reason. Thyroid deficiency is much more common in women, and that may be another reason why you see some increased risk of Alzheimer's in women as well. So, you know, it's funny. We think, well, the studies are very clear that even mild low levels of thyroid on other hormones, even if they're technically normal, contribute dramatically to the increase in dementia and Alzheimer's. But we don't somehow think that, oh, well, maybe once they get Alzheimer's, maybe we should tune up their hormones and see if their brain gets better. It doesn't even cross into the medical way of thinking because there's no money in it.
What about testosterone in women, though? You just mentioned men. Have there been corresponding studies with women and testosterone levels in Alzheimer's or dementia?
I've not seen those, but I think it does make sense. In women, we often see low testosterone as they go through menopause as well. And I think it's just common sense to optimize hormone levels in general in people, to optimize hormone levels in general, in people.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll just stop it there. But if they have dementia, even more important to do so.
We also see in an aging population, they have different symptoms of infections, whereas younger people will have pain on urination if they have a urinary tract infection. Older people will experience confusion rather than pain. They'll experience no pain, just confusion. And so looking for infections could be a very powerful part of the protocol in working with people with memory loss.
I still remember as a resident in my training, if you had somebody with dementia, totally confused in the hospital, who had a rip-roaring bladder infection, I mean, horrible ulcers and the rest, but they didn't complain of burning,
mm-hmm.
It was called having an asymptomatic bladder infection, which meant that, oh, don't worry about it, it's not causing any problem at all. And it's like, if you were I, you know, and Carol, can you imagine if any of us have this horrible bladder infection? I mean, it's almost like pus coming out of the bladder sometimes, especially if they have the urine tubes in. If we had those, we would not be at our sharpest. Somebody whose brain is right on the edge of recognizing their kids or not, and you have this so-called asymptomatic bladder infection, and you don't have to give more and more antibiotics, especially if there's bladder tubes or Foley catheters, and there's the argument that you're going to get reinfected. But you can give something called mannose. It's a simple nutritional benign supplement that washes out the E. coli infections, as most of them are, without any side effects, without any problems. So, yes, you really need to look for infections that include not only bladder infections, but also even sinus infections and candida overgrowth. Let me give some thoughts. If we see all the time people with fibromyalgia, that candida overgrowth will cause gas, bloating, diarrhea, constipation, postnasal drip, sorry, I feel a lot, and brain fog. Brain fog is extremely part of the candida overgrowth. So you notice how in the movies, all these old, the so-called old-timers, well, that's usually candida. And sometimes these old-timers are given the label of being old farts. Where do you think all that gas is coming from? It's coming from candida overgrowth and other gut infections, which can contribute to confusion. So you've got to look for and treat these things. Because, again, an important principle is that if you have somebody, say you have somebody and they need to give a kidney to somebody else, you know, you can take out a whole kidney with no loss of kidney function. The one leftover kidney does fine. You can lose about a third to half of that kidney and no problem. And then you lose the last 5 to 10% and you're on dialysis. So the body has a lot of reserve. And the brain is the same thing. It's more, you know, diffused through the brain. But you can lose a lot of mental functioning before you really show problems that people will notice day to day. But when you get to that last little bit, 5% of function makes a big difference. And that's why some days the person will recognize their kids and otherwise they may not. And it's not because the Alzheimer's goes away one day and comes the next. It's because a little 5% decrease in function makes a massive difference in the person's ability to function. And therefore, if you give the brain a simple tune-up, what we call the mind protocol, you get an increased 5, 10% function. That's the difference between not recognizing your kids versus being able to take care of yourself. That can buy you many years, and even full-time where you don't have a problem in the future. So treating the infections, that's one important piece of the mind protocol.
What about...
you know what? I'm going to interrupt you. Oh. I'm sorry. I am going to go to a break. We're speaking with Dr. Jacob Teitelbaum, author of Real Cause, Real Cure, The 9 Root Causes of the Most Common Health Problems and How to Solve Them, From Fatigue to Fantastic, Beat Sugar Addiction Now, and Pain-Free 1, 2, 3. And I could go on, and then it would go through the whole break, explaining and sharing with you all he has authored and shared with us to benefit our health. We will be right back. We're speaking about Alzheimer's. Speaking with Dr. Jacob Teitelbaum, Carol Peterson, and myself, this is Take Charge of Your Health, and our topic today is Alzheimer's, diagnosis, prevention, and in many cases, cure. All Carol, right, was just going into a question. Carol, what is your question for Dr. Teitelbaum?
We started out this program talking about bone broths and how good they are nutritionally and have many things like the minerals and collagen and whatnot, I'm sure have
amino
a very
acids.
Positive effect on the brain. Are there any particular foods or diets that would be more conducive to keeping your brain health, Dr. Teitelbaum?
Well, some interesting data, Carol, is that if you take a look at the prevalence of Alzheimer's in India, it's 70% lower than the prevalence in the United States. And that's been traced back to the curcumin.
Curry.
The spice that makes curries yellow. There have been animal studies and now human studies looking at the effect of curcumin in Alzheimer's. And it basically seems to melt away many of the amyloid plaque changes and that you'll see. In fact, there was a recent patent granted to a specific form of curcumin in the United States for treating Alzheimer's. Now, here's a key thing for curcumin. Unless you're eating an Indian diet, and I just got back from India about a month ago, and it was curry for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. So unless you're doing that, you're not going to really absorb enough curcumin to have the benefits that you need. And the benefits for curcumin are massive. I mean, there are literally thousands of studies looking at cancer, pain, arthritis, rheumatoid arthritis, depression, and Alzheimer's. So you need a form that's highly absorbed. And the one that the studies have been done with, and most of the studies, frankly, is called BCM95. And what they did, it was brilliant. They realized that if they take the essential oil of the plant, and it has to be, they found this a turmerone component of the oil, it increases the absorption of pure curcumin by 693%. And what that means is that instead of 7 capsules or the next best, all you need is 1. So in our study, we're probably using a little bit higher dose than we need. We're using 750 milligrams of what's called Curamed, C-U-R-A-M-E-D, and that's the only form I would use. And we're giving 2 twice a day as part of the study. For prevention of Alzheimer's, if I had a family history, I would be taking one of the 750 milligrams once a day. So number one would be the curcumin. Number two would be folic acid. Even the Alzheimer's Association is starting to recognize that folic acid deficiency, and it doesn't have to be that low to put you in the lowest 2% of the population, major, major player in increasing the risk of Alzheimer's and dementia. So getting your green leafy vegetables, and frankly, I recommend that people get a good multivitamin because there's not one nutrient. There's literally dozens of nutrients that are playing a role. So the vitamin D, the folic acid, the magnesium, the B vitamins, especially things like thiamine, riboflavin, all of these play an important role in cognitive function. So I like to use powders. I don't like people having to take handfuls of pills all day. I use a vitamin powder called the Energy Revitalization System. That's what I take each morning, where one scoop a day increases, well, basically it replaces 35 supplement pills, makes it really easy to get overall optimal nutritional support. And we're also looking in a second study at the use of a nutrient called ribose, which increases energy production in the cells, to look at the effect of the ribose on the Alzheimer's. So in the study that we're doing, there's 2 parts. We're giving the ribose for 8 weeks, followed by doing the whole rest of the MIND protocol.
I want to explain just a little bit to the audience why this information about turmeric is so profound. One of the reasons is that we've seen these dramatic results in rat models, I mean, with brain tumors shrinking, liver tumors shrinking, but the dose in the rat model is so high, it had to be so high, that it really wasn't possible for people to take in such a high dose. What the Indians do is they take their turmeric and they mix it with butter and also with pepper. And so you have this fat and this irritant, the pepper, which irritates the intestine, and the fat absorbing with the turmeric and enhancing or increasing the absorption. So this BCM 95 is very exciting because what we're seeing is higher levels in the patient without taking tremendous number of pills and without having to eat daily breakfast, lunch, and dinner curry and turmeric, which our population really won't do. So,
in fact, the book that I'm writing now, Corinne, I'm writing two books. One I can't talk about yet. It's not ready for talk about yet. But the other one is a book looking at these herbals and cancer, looking especially at curcumin, boswellia, looking at some of the things like quercetin and others. The studies are dramatic, especially the curcumin and the boswellia, dramatic effects in the studies. And
those are
writing that the book with one of the main researchers down at Baylor University, who's an oncology researcher, who's done a lot of the research in this area. These are things that are just fascinating, powerful areas.
Well, both of those that you spoke of, actually all three, are very, very powerful anti-inflammatories.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that that has a very important piece of why they are preventative for cancer, but as well as many other things.
Right, back to dementia and Alzheimer's. Is there an inflammatory component there too?
There's an inflammatory component, but it goes even beyond that too. When you're looking at things like quercetin, or if you're looking at some of the ones that you'll see in the wine, you'll see that these are phenolics, and it's a class of compounds. You can find them in chocolate too, which is one of my favorite drugs. In fact, I would argue it's my drug of choice. these things have other powerful biochemical effects. So the inflammatory effect is just one of the components. The curcumin and boswellia are powerful anti-inflammatories, but they're balanced. They hit several pathways. It's not just a single pathway that they hit, like the ibuprofen. And when you look at the arthritis medications called NSAIDs, probably seen this data, mm-hmm. you have over 30,000 deaths a year in the United States.
That's right.
Largely preventable from NSAID medications, 16,500 bleeding ulcer deaths, and a 40 to 300% increased risk of heart attack and stroke. And the 30,000 number is probably very conservative. You have the placebo-controlled studies showing head-on studies that the combination of the curcumin and the boswellia, and I like a combination called curcumin, is more effective than Celebrex in head-on studies for arthritis. Other things, willow bark, boswellia, and sherry, a combination called N-pain, twice as effective as Motrin for back pain. And you have many, many, many studies for rheumatoid arthritis, again, too, the curcumin, but it needs to be the BCM95, the Curamed form, or the curcumin form, very, very effective. So there's, and again, so I'm not against the medications. I'm a doctor. I prescribe a lot of medications. I just think that we need to put them in perspective that what standard medicine offers, and it's funny, my wife is coming up with an image of a pie chart where if you have all the things that can help people and their health issues, and in medical school, if you have that pie chart of all the things, we're given the impression when we got out of medical school that 98% of what can help people are parts of the medical profession and the other professions that are slave to, slaves to empty medicine, or basically where they can't do their job unless a doctor has no clue what they're doing, tells them to do it.
Mm-hmm.
As you sometimes see, Carol, I suspect, isn't in pharmacy.
Yep.
And then you have to call up a doctor and explain to them why they should do what they need to do so you can have it done. See a physical therapist all the time, where it's like playing a game of charades. You know, the physical therapist has to get the doctor to write the order for that thing the doctor doesn't even know how to spell. You know, so it's crazy. But so you have that pie chart of 98% of things being medical, and maybe 2% of cute, quirky things that could help people that were outside of medicine that were being offered by quacks. I'm sorry, not quacks, other health professionals.
Yes.
It's pathetic, and if you look at the real pie chart and how it really should be, it's really closer to about maybe 15% of what helps people, 15 to 25%, is part of standard medicine, with the medications, surgery, things like that. Standard medicine excels in acute medical emergencies, heart attacks, strokes, people who are having massive injuries from trauma. Medicine shines. But for these other things, for chronic illnesses especially, medicine, what's the medical term I'm looking for? Sucks. And it's just that there's so many other things in the research that are very effective, but they can't make it through the process needed to be able to make the medical change for them, because it costs $400 to $800 million per item and to go through the bureaucracy and be able to talk about things.
And that's not even to mention the thing that's been looked at a little bit more lately is risk-benefit ratio, when they actually start looking at some of the drug entities and how many people actually have a benefit compared to all the people who will take it with little or no benefit, but all the costs and all the side effects. It's a little scary when you start talking about curcumin. I don't know what curcumin toxicity might look like. Even eating curry three times a day isn't producing toxicity.
The main toxicity is you eat way too much. It may burn as it comes out.
Uh-huh.
You know, but I mean, instead of these side effects, you get side benefits.
Mm-hmm.
Less depression, less inflammation, less Alzheimer's, lower risk of cancer. You'll see that with a host of things like glucosamine. 17% of lower risk people in the studies on glucosamine were 17% less likely to die during the study than the control group. So you get all these side benefits as opposed to medications where you get all these side effects.
All of us have patients that come in our office and say to us that my parents both have memory problems, that they literally lost their memory. What can I do to prevent this? And how would you approach that? What would you start them on? And how would you approach
them? Again, with a MIND protocol, Corinne. So find a good holistic doctor. You can go to abihm.org and find over 2,000 board-certified holistic doctors. If you're in New York, you can go see Corinne, because Karen, I bet you can do this stuff in your sleep. And you can have the person optimize thyroid and other hormone levels, not to get it in the normal range or not in the lowest 2%, but to optimize it. You look for infections, bladder, sinus infections, candida are the main ones. You give nutritional support. I would give the Curamed twice a day for fish oil, because the brain is made of the DHA. I would give Vect Omega, because one of those a day replaces 8 regular fish oil pills. I would put them on a multivitamin, like the Energy Revitalization System. And I would probably at this point also put them on ribose, 5 grams once or twice a day. That's the overall nutritional things. Make sure they're not dehydrated. Some basic things like that. Check their B12. Check their ferritin level to make sure that it's over 60. That looks for iron stores. And then I would work with a holistic doctor and with your family doctor if they're willing. I would say, look, you know, any of these medications that are not critical, you know, if they're 80 years old and they've not had a heart attack and they are taking statin medications, the data and all the experts, pretty much except the ones on the payroll of the drug companies, that are saying, feed them to your cats, feed them to your kids, everybody should take them, put them in the fountains. The research, you see over and over, they say, the elderly don't need to be on statins. It causes more toxicity than help. You get them off of a lot of these anticholinergics. We talked about the Sagapro, the Angelica for the incontinence. You get them off medications they don't need. Even the ones they need, we substitute other families of medications, say for their blood pressure or other issues, for a week or so to see if their mind clears up, to see how much of this problem is a drug side effect. So the MIND protocol. And then for those that are interested, if you have a family member with Alzheimer's or dementia, get a piece of paper and a pen. If you're interested in being in the study, and you can be in New York City and be in the study, the phone number to call is 410-573-5389. That's 410-573-5389. Just leave a voicemail if you'd like to be in the dementia study. You have a family member. And my staffers will, in the next few days, get back to you, give you information about being in the study. In addition, get the eyes checked to make sure it's not vision problems. get the ears checked to make sure there's not hearing loss.
Mm-hmm.
Make sure the person is sleeping, using all kind of nice herbals. I like the revitalizing sleep formula, a nice herbal mix for sleep. Make sure they're not depressed. The curcumin, by the way, more effective than the antidepressants in two double-blind studies, especially for severe depression. It was much more effective than medication. So there's all these things that can be done to really tune up the individual. And so, like I say, if you want to be in the study, give us a call. And if not, Corinne, you want to give your phone number so people can contact you so they can make an appointment and you can give them a tune-up?
Definitely. That comes at the end of the show. But I wanted to bring up sleep a little bit and how important sleep has to do with our ability to think and function in the daytime. They did studies with melatonin in a facility, in an older age facility, where they gave a half a milligram of melatonin, and they gave it nightly. And within 6 months, the whole population was sleeping better and mentally clearer. Can you explain a little bit about that to us?
Well, sleep is where you recharge your neurotransmitters, including acetylcholine. And first of all, you'll see a lot of people with a confusion with the Alzheimer's. They have trouble sleeping. But they also even had a study, this was done about 2 years ago, where they looked at sleep problems and they found that poor sleep could actually help predict a higher risk of getting Alzheimer's. So there's a number, you know, of things. Sleep is an important part of the healing process. So there's natural things you can get for sleep. The melatonin is really good. And so I'm betting that if they actually showed improvement in the study,
tremendous.
Melatonin was therefore more effective than the Aricept and the Menta. And again, I'm not against those medications and Alzheimer's. I think it's like chicken soup. It's not going to hurt. Add a little bit of something. Now that helps a little, but it can't help. But it did not improve cognitive function. It slowed breakdown. So the melatonin, if it improved cognitive function, was more effective than the medications. But I'm betting that most neurologists, in fact, probably over 95 to 99% of neurologists, have never heard of that study, and they don't bother giving the melatonin. Why? Because there's no money in it, and therefore, they don't have all the journals, conferences, professors, and God bless them, the big rest of drug reps and handsome guy drug reps who are cheerleaders, fawning all over them saying, who know to the penny how much of their Aricept and Menta they prescribed. So, you know, you got to realize your doctor's going to be good at what they know about, which is basically what the drug companies find to be most profitable. But they don't know squat about most of the research about other things that are not profitable, because nobody is going to pay. God bless them. They're really good, well-meaning people, and I love them, and they really care about you. But God bless them. Nobody's going to pay to stuff the information down their throat and the research on anything that's not exquisitely profitable. Well, Carol, am I being overly skeptical here?
Not at all, unfortunately. it's a terrible situation. I was just thinking about eggs, though. So the drugs are designed to increase acetylcholine, and eggs are a really good source of choline. Is this a source that's readily available to make acetylcholine with?
I don't know. You know, eggs do have choline, and the vitamin powder has choline in it because it is the raw material for the acetylcholine.
Mm-hmm.
But let me just give, it's funny, I've been spending the last year or two busting medical myths. And one of the myths that I love to bust is the one that eggs increase heart attacks.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember when I was first out of residency, I went to a talk by a nutritionist, Dana Locke, who was talking about how if you eat 6 eggs a day for 6 weeks, it has no effect on cholesterol. And I went up after the talk as the all-knowing, all-wise doctor, and I ripped her throat out, saying, how dare you misinform people by giving those lies. Everybody knows they have the Hegstead equations that show that eat this much cholesterol, it raises your blood cholesterol this much. And she just smiled patiently while I went through my all-knowing medical doctor rant. And she said, here are 6 studies. And I looked at them, where they gave 6 eggs a day for 6 weeks, and they had no effect on cholesterol. Even the American Heart Association is saying now that if you eat an egg or 2 a day, it's not going to affect heart disease risk. But it's the best, most healthy protein you can get, short of eating another human being. It's called a complete protein. So it's a really good source of nutrients in general. And hard-boiled and soft-boiled eggs are going to be the healthiest way, where the cholesterol is not oxidized. But at the end of the day, or I should say, eggs are a good, healthy food, and it's not going to raise your cholesterol.
With that said, it's a wonderful way to launch a new year with all our resolutions. Also, the end of our show.
One other thing, Corinne?
Yes.
One other health food, eat more chocolate. Don't go for a quantity. Go for the best tasting, a small amount each day. You'll be healthier for it.
I used to grind chocolate with chilies and put it over a chicken. Just a little, and it was delicious. And that's a very Mexican recipe. Mm-hmm. Chocolate, peanuts, pepitos, pumpkin seeds, and chilies, and grind it up. It's called mole, or one form of it. Dr. Teitelbaum, can we get your website?
www.endfatigue.com. So E, and like Nancy, B like David, and the word fatigue, FATIGUE.com.
And the phone number again, please, for those people who want to be in a non-toxic Alzheimer's study.
410-573-5389.
It's always a pleasure. Just so much fun to have you here. We can barely keep up with you, but we try.
Corinne, Carol, it's a blast. But next time you come, you'll do the show in Hawaii. I'll pour the Mai Tais for you guys.
Oh.
And we can all have red noses.
We'll be on the next flight out.
And the week after, we'll do the show in Hawaii. Okay, thank you, Dr. Teitelbaum. And we'll see you soon. Carol.
You can also follow us on our blogspot, takechargeofhealth.blogspot.com.
Thank you so much for sharing this time with us, and we will be back next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Concluding today, I'd like you to remember, this information is not a substitute for treatment. As always, we urge you to take this and all other information we share to your healthcare practitioner. Clearly, this comes under the category of taking charge of your health. You can find me on Facebook, Corinne Fornari, RPA, CCN, that's CORINNE FURNARI, or my website, FornariHealth.com, or my office number,
212-219-0700. That's 212-219-0700.
Thank you for sharing this time with me, and I'll see you next week. Bye-bye. Antes de acordar.